You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist-inspired radio brought to you by CKUT and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragon Root has two genders and symbolizes the diversity of every body and every mind on the gender spectrum. Tune in every Tuesday morning from 8:39 on 90.3 FM or ckut.ca/listen. You can also pick up and choose from our archives at center2110.org. We bring you reports from the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, live tunes from feminists, queer, trans, and gender-aware musical guests, and interviews about a wide array of social justice issues examined through a gender-perceptive lens. Welcome to Dragon Root Radio. I'm your co-host, Hannah, and I'm joined today with my fellow co-host, Chloe. On today's show, our Dragon Root contributor, Michael, is bringing us special content from an interview with Oakland-based soul singer, musician, and songstress, Naima. Later on in the show, Chloe will be interviewing Serena Zaff, a performance artist and activist interested in work with Indigenous solidarity and gentrification in Victoria. But first up is Naima.
Naima Shalhoub is an Oakland, California-based soul singer, musician, songstress, and cultural advocate for racial, gender, immigrant, and land justice. Her musical style embodies an amalgam of genres, which include American soul, jazz, rhythm and blues, Arabic soul, and roots music, among others. Growing up a first-generation Lebanese-Arab woman in upstate New York fills life with a set of complexities and understandings that reverberates in the depths of Naima's music. I'd like to take the opportunity to welcome Ms. Naima Shalhoub to the airwaves of CKUT. Welcome, Naima. I've already taken the liberty of briefly introducing you to our listeners, but I'd like you to be able to describe in your own words, Naima, how you see yourself as a musician through the various layers of your identity.
Through the layers of my identity, everything comes through my soul. It's where I find the most freedom when I sing. And as a result of that, because of life I've led, being Arab American, as a woman of color, all these different layers definitely show up through the music in terms of what I gravitate toward singing about, even how I sing, the musicians that I play with, my band, the rhythms that I love, you know, infusing with, you know, for example, American soul and Arabic rhythms and North African. So it definitely all kind of creates an interesting conversation between my identities, I guess I would say. But ultimately, it's definitely through the lens of what my soul just wants to say, which I believe is just boundless and through all those forms, you know. So that's what at least I hope happens. So.
Okay. And you use the term diaspora soul as a musical space that you operate in. I was wondering how you personally connect to this genre and how you feel it comes across in your music.
Yes. So I guess from what I was saying about the soul, diaspora soul, I see, since I'm in diaspora, my parents are from Lebanon, and they were born in Sierra Leone, raised in Lebanon, and my whole family is Lebanese, and then I was born, the first of my generation born in the U.S. So because I carry so many different cultures with me, and then just being, you know, growing up in the U.S. and all the cultures around me that I have been influenced by. Diaspora soul, I just felt like through different conversations with friends, best describe the music that I want to write, given kind of across genres and through different forms. And I haven't seen a lot of soul music that also plays, and has the soul music that plays with particular, you know, different instruments and different traditional instruments mixed together. Is that going on? But for me, in terms of lyrically, also thinking about social justice and whatnot, I just kind of wanted to create a space for myself just to be free, not to feel like I needed to fit in any one or two genres. So because of the work I've done in post-colonial anthropology and advocacy, I felt diaspora soul resonated the best.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you're a classically trained musician, and I was curious how your background studying voice and music theory, your experience in jazz, classical chorus, and school musicals, how do you feel that all these different levels of your experience with music growing up has contributed to your sound?
Good question. I think definitely studying music classically and studying theory has enabled me to communicate, especially with my band, or if I'm writing a song, I already have a basic, I mean, I didn't go too far into theory like a lot of, you know, jazz musicians that I respect, but just having a basic understanding has just allowed me to translate to a degree what's inside of me musically to what I want to do so that we have some kind of canvas to start with. And definitely vocally has been a huge help because all those years of training as a younger person just really gave me a strong foundation vocally. To then now I'm just kind of able to just play with different things, play with sounds. And I think training younger really strengthened my voice. So, yeah, and also theater, just feeling comfortable in front of people and as a performer definitely has helped a lot.
And so how young did you start learning about music?
Well, I started piano when I was 4 years old, okay. On and off until, you know, my later teenage years in terms of lessons and whatnot. And then vocally, I started singing in choirs, when I was about 10, and then started getting trained. I was about 12 or 13, through like about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. And when did you find yourself singing with bands and in groups? Outside
that only happened 3 years ago, not even actually, on and off. I started in 2009. I had come from a huge shift in my life. I had just spent a bunch of time in Lebanon, and I was going through just a lot of different personal transitions and came back to the States wanting to just focus on music. And I started writing music then. I hadn't really written my own music up until that point at the end of 2009. And then I started performing solo just with me and my ukulele for about 6 months in 2010. And then that kind of turned into me playing with getting a band together. Then I stopped for about a year just to write and just to go inward and deal with other things in life. And now I have this amazing band. There's five of us. And everyone just has such an interesting musical story. And so that's kind of how it's happened to this day.
Okay. Now, the first song of yours I'd like to play is an acoustic recording of O Sky. Could you tell me a little bit about where this song comes from, the place that the song comes from?
Yes. So after I was performing a lot and things were really moving at actually fast pace, I just kind of put the brakes on everything. And I just felt like I had some unresolved things, I guess, in my emotional, call it spiritual, you know, life and just dealing with trying to reconcile a lot of different things in the world, a lot of oppression, a lot of injustice that I was seeing in the world to kind of how it affects my life and just a lot of questioning. And I was really affecting my ability to write and to perform. So I took some time off. And in that time, I wrote O Sky basically as a huge question to the skies, to the heavens, to that which is greater than me, to my soul, basically trying to seek some kind of resolve or about just all the different things that I was seeing in life around me, different wars, even just me, how I carry myself in the everyday, the violences that I've experienced, which path to go down, you know, It was just a lot of questioning, and so O Sky really, really came from that place.
Oh, 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 oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. On a street, holding signs up for a cause. Used to believe that my faith would save me from loss. Used to have clear vision of a dream, but it's slowly drifting farther. I'm breathless, I'm trying to see. I started asking such a simple question. And now, wise men after wise men wanna sell me an answer. Oh, sky, tell me what
Tell me a little bit about the process of getting your first single, Herstory of Soul, released.
So Herstory of Soul came from, I decided to do, beginning of, a year ago. So to the beginning of 2012, I decided to do a Kickstarter campaign. I had never had anything produced or released before, and I really, really wanted to take the creative time to put myself out there with a single and a video. It was really important to me. I just wanted to work on, you know, just getting my sound and just everything that I've learned through recording and putting myself out there visually and how vulnerable that is. I wanted to go through that process. So I did a Kickstarter campaign to raise money, and it was successful, and I was just flooded with so much love and support around me. And so I decided to work with actually a really good friend of mine, Eccentric, who's an amazing MC. He's Palestinian-American, so we have the Arab-American music connection, and as well as just really good friends. And so he produced the track. We'd get together every week and work on it, and I decided to release that.
What would you like our listeners to know about you as a musician through what they hear in Herstory of Soul?
The reason why I guess I wanted to release Herstory of Soul is because regardless of how many people heard it, for myself, I wanted to put that song out there because it represented so much of this rebirth that I was going through and just basically reclaiming my soul, reclaiming myself as a whole person, and along with the shadows and the light and the joys and the stars and everything. And so that whole song is really about me claiming my liberation, claiming my freedom and place in this world. So I guess as listeners listen to it, I hope that they're moved to find their own place of freedom within themselves, so that there's no boundary, no limit to what they feel like it can be and have in this world. And yes, there's oppression, and yes, there's injustice, and there's certain things that we have to struggle against and dance, but in terms of intimacy, there's a moment in time and an ongoing process where we can claim our own liberation, and and kind of just thrown off any chains of enslavement that we might have inherited or that we're conditioned by. And so I just hope to put that out into the world.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Naima.
Thank you so much, Michael.
So you just heard an interview with Oakland-based soul singer and musician, Naima. Now we're going to turn to an interview with Serena Zaff. So Serena is a performance artist and activist who's doing a lot of work around Indigenous solidarity and gentrification in Victoria, or also unceded Coast Salish and Algonquin territory. So today we're going to talk a little bit about something called social art practice and what that is and why it's important to Serena and how does gender fit into that. So hi, Serena.
Hi.
Thank you for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So maybe we'll start off by having you talk a little bit about the work that you do.
Sure. So on Algonquin territory, which is colonially known as Victoria, I'm a practicing artist and activist. I feel like both those merge quite a bit with what I do. But I guess predominantly I'm looking at the ways that different relations and spaces become locations for perpetuating dominant culture, and the ways that we often don't question those relationships, and that's relationships both between people and as well as with the land and the spaces that we move in. So through my art practice, I look at disrupting those or creating new ways that we can relate to one another and relate to the land and relate to spaces. So I think how that looks in the context of urban space Victoria often is looking at policing poverty, which is really prominent in Victoria, or colonialism, settler colonial state, and a settler colonial city.
Okay. When you're, like, I guess maybe we'll back up for a second when you talk about art and performing art. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about how you came to thinking that that was an interesting or important thing to be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like I started out my art practice looking at more traditional painting and sculpting. I was just really wanting to be more creative. I came out of university with a political science degree, but always really loved art. And the more that I was getting into that and thinking through my politics, which are rooted in anarchist politics, I was trying to understand how not just the content could be something that's rooted in the way that I see the world, and so wanting to have break down the hierarchies of artists and viewer or audience and be able to have co-creators in that art practice. And really, I came from a background of a lot of facilitation, and so trying to think how I also could just merge the different kinds of work that I was doing with facilitating with communities, whether that's learning or unlearning spaces or giving workshops on different political topics, anti-oppression, decolonization, feminism, and so bringing all of these things together in a practice that had the process that we were doing together really be one of co-creation of meaning, which is part of why I perform. It's something that's happening right there. People can choose or choose not to participate, and we're creating that experience together to social art practice, which I think really involves everyone who's present in creating that work. And so it has a political content, but it also shows practices that are participatory and non-hierarchical.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of started explaining a little bit, but maybe you could talk to us a little bit more about what is social art practice.
Let me think. I guess social art practice for me looks, I mean, we were talking about this earlier before coming, it looks a lot like activism or facilitating different spaces. I've looked a lot to the work of Zoe Cray and Suzanne Lacey, who 3 weeks in May is a work by Suzanne Lacey, where after a number of rapes in LA, they had this whole 3 weeks where they did work to draw attention to it. They did graffiti, they held workshops, they did large performances in order to protest this, but also to work with women who had experienced that. And so I draw a lot on that in my art practice. Currently, I'm working on a piece called Interrupt. And to keep it very as brief as I can, there's an empty lot that's going to be sold to the city and probably developed into a technology park. And so they talk about how they're going to consult the public once they've spent 3 years planning this. And for me, that is not a participatory consultation process. So I've been working with three different grassroots groups in Victoria: the Society of Living Illicit Drug Users, Big Brains Medium Dreamers, which is a radical youth collective, as well as a Camas info shop, to have conversations with them over food about what they would create that space into. And so for me, that's my practice, where we get to have discussions together and work together. And I was really interested in the ideas that my community had about what they would like to see in that space.
Mm-hmm. And so, yes, as Serena mentioned, we've been talking about this a lot over the last few days. And somebody asked a question on Saturday night, like, how is this different, or why do you consider this different from activism, entre guillemets, like in quotation marks?
I mean, I think how I can, for me, it's something that I needed to reconcile for myself in thinking about my practice and my activism. So there's that aspect of it. But I also think that in conversations that I've had with some of my other friends who definitely come at these more from a political organizing sense than an art sense, which makes for really interesting conversations, It allows for more creativity. I think in any discipline or field, when you don't have the ability to have fluid, porous, like, boundaries of how you're conceptualizing it, you end up perpetuating and recreating the same ways of doing things. Your activism looks a certain way. You always march from point A to point B, and you hold your signs and you claim your things. And I think that there's power in that, but similar to art, is you often recreate the same kinds of relationships of artist and gallery and audience. But I found that social art practice opened me up to being able to merge things and think about things differently. And so, and in that, again, and I've spoken to this, is like looking at that process, and so not just looking at the content, but recognizing that for me, there's anarchist art historian Alan Antliff has talked about, is ends means synthesis, where I can't use processes to arrive at a certain goal that don't reflect my goal in itself and my own politics, because that whole process is part of is part of our revolution, is part of transforming the ways that we do things and the ways that we relate to each other. And so I guess through thinking about it as art, it allows me to pay attention to that process, because as an artist, I was learning a lot about watching my process, whether that was with painting and the ways that things interact, or now with social relationships or performance and symbolism in the body.
And for me, when you're talking about process and details and relationships and hierarchies, something I guess I'm really interested in, and this is part of conversations we've had earlier around like how the space is set up, and like not just the physical space, but also like how we create space. And I think that I guess these are the sorts of practices that are often really gendered. And so I guess I'd be interested in how you see the role of gender coming into your work.
I think most explicitly I think about gender in my performance art. Performance art traditionally is created by incredibly powerful feminist women, if you look at the art history canon. And I feel as though even now we have the male body still as that normative, universal body. And so whenever I do performance work, as my body is a part of that, it takes on gender. And I look at a lot of work around my own experiences of sexual violence, as well as trying to bring those into a bigger context, especially working in British Columbia and with the Highway of Tears and the missing Indigenous women across Canada, being seeing connections with that and wanting to be able to take responsibility as a settler and be able to communicate with settler people and across those kinds of divides through my body and my work.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming in again and sharing with us, and hopefully we'll see you on the airwaves again.
Yeah, thank you.
So you're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM, the Tuesday morning after. We've come to the end of today's edition of Dragon Root, but be sure to tune in next week for more content on gender-based issues.
You've been listening to the Tuesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM. That's the end of our show today. Bossa Bossa is coming up next.